It is not the duty of government to support the country. Rather, it is the country that must support the government.
Mr. President, starring Edward Arnold. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Before we bring you Edward Arnold as Mr. President, I'd like to point out that there are no more stirring stories in the world than stories of Americans who have become the leaders of our country. Generation after generation of American men and women have found their greatest inspiration in the lives of the presidents of the United States. Their deeds are direction pointers for the American mind. Today, people are more interested than ever to know the intimate, interesting, and inspiring facts about the lives of their former chief executives. That's why Mr. President has rapidly caught the attention of people everywhere. For here's the program that presents human, intimate anecdotes and incidents in the careers of our presidents. And you, the listener, enjoy the additional thrill of trying to identify the president in the story being told. And now, see if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based.
It was a pleasant afternoon in Washington some years ago. The president, after a day filled with conferences, had slipped away to visit a little shop where he enjoyed marketing and talking to the proprietor.
Mr. President, it's a great honor to see you again.
Now, none of that, Mrs. Appleby. I'm just another customer.
All right, Mr. President, but just the same, I'm still honored.
You know, I like to shop here, Mrs. Appleby. Your store's clean and well-managed, your prices are reasonable, and besides, you have common sense.
It's very kind of you to say that. After all, you know a great many great people and educated people. I'm afraid I've never had much education.
Even education, my dear Mrs. Appleby, is no substitute for intelligence.
Mr. President, if you're not too busy, and if it isn't too forward of me...
What is it, madam? Come, you can speak freely.
Well, may I offer you a cup of tea?
Why, of course. I'd be delighted.
Oh, good. The tea things are in the kitchen behind the store, and the water's boiling already. I'll bring a cup right out. It will only take a second. You just wait right here.
Is there any reason why we can't drink tea in the kitchen?
Why, no, sir. None. None at all.
Then I'll just go along with you.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so flustered, I hardly know what to do. Imagine a president drinking tea in my kitchen.
You know, Mrs. Appleby, when I was a boy, I used to take my father's cabbages to the marketplace. I wasn't too proud to have tea in the kitchen then. I may have a better job now, but I hope I'm still the same person.
You sit right here, and I'll pour you a nice cup of tea. Do you like cream and sugar?
Just sugar, please. Tell me, Mrs. Appleby, how is business these days?
Well, not as good as it has been, sir.
Why is that? You have good merchandise?
Well, Mr. President, prices are too high. The prices I have to pay and the prices I have to charge. Do you realize that almost everything is two or three times as high as it was just a few years ago?
That much?
Yes. And it means that too many of my customers are unable to buy the things they really need.
But people are working and wages are at a very high level.
But not quite high enough to pay for the increased cost of living, I'm afraid. Rents are more than double, and clothing is way up. Why, even the price of beef is nearly twice as much as it used to be.
But isn't there more beef in your store these days?
No, sir. If anything, there's less.
Oh, there you are. If you have 50 pounds of beef, calling it 100 pounds doesn't make it 100 pounds. Not even if the price tag is double. But that reminds me. I came in here to buy 5 pounds of beef. And even though the price may be a little high, Mrs. Appleby, your excellent tea and this fine chat make it a real bargain.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wish all of my customers felt that way.
It's good of you to see me, Mr. President.
Not at all, Mr. Winthrop, not at all. I know you're one man who doesn't want to be a postmaster or a customs inspector.
Oh, good heavens, no. No, my brokerage business keeps me very thoroughly occupied. And since mine is one of the largest firms in New York, I thought it only fitting that I call on the new leader of the country to discuss business conditions.
Well, I'm glad you were able to find time for it. Apparently business conditions meet with your approval, Mr. Winthrop.
My enthusiastic approval, sir. I've enjoyed 2 of the greatest years in my life. And so is the rest of the country. You give us another 4 years of the same, and this nation will be the most prosperous on the face of the globe.
You overestimate my powers and abilities, sir. Prosperity isn't mine to give, much as I'd like it to be the lot of every one of our citizens.
Well, you know what I mean. It's within the government's power to make it easy on business or difficult for it. You've come into office at a very fortunate hour in our history, sir.
Oh, and what makes you say that?
Well, what could be happier for a president? The national debt has been reduced to zero. There's a surplus in the treasury. The harvests have been plentiful. Mr. President, you have nothing to worry about.
Perhaps. But has it ever occurred to you, Mr. Winthrop, that there may have been too much expansion too rapidly?
Why, how can you say that? Well, you yourself in your inaugural speech said that every patriot has reason to be satisfied.
Well, I believed so at the time. But I'm inclined to mistrust our so-called prosperity. It isn't shared by all. It isn't based on extra production. And to me, Mr. Winthrop, the one and only real wealth lies in production.
Oh, that's an old-fashioned concept. You're a pessimist, sir. These are new days. Investment is what creates wealth. And ample credit attracts plenty of investors.
Have you ever watched a child blow up a soap bubble?
Huh? Oh, I dare say I have. Why?
Then you know that it is big and prosperous looking. Blown too big, however, it is certain to burst.
Ah, but we're dealing in realities, not soap bubbles. Well, I'll have to be running along. I'm sorry you don't share my optimism.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Oh, come in, son, come in. This is Mr. Winthrop.
Oh, how do you do, sir?
Oh, I'm very happy to meet you, young man. Tell me, what do you think of our national prosperity?
Oh, I think it's wonderful, Mr. Winthrop.
Ha-ha! There's your answer, Mr. President. Well, good day.
Good day, Mr. Winthrop. Good day.
What's the matter, Father? Did I say something wrong?
No, you're entitled to your opinion, my boy. Only you spoiled the point I was trying to make with our brokerage friend about the dangers of this current prosperity.
Dangers? Father, do you remember Willard Bryan?
Willard Bryan? Oh, yes, the boy who was in your class at school.
Yes.
What's happened to him?
Well, he went in business with his older brother, Michael. Investments. They've been buying and selling western lands. Do you know how much they've made in the last 2 years?
No, but from your excitement, I judge it's been a pretty penny.
They've made more than $200,000.
No, it doesn't seem possible.
Yes, Willard says that they could make as much this year if it weren't for the Treasury Department's order that public lands be paid for in hard money. He's very bitter about that order.
Yes, I can imagine. But I, for one, am happy that my predecessor in this office put at least this brake on the speculators.
But doesn't it work a hardship on investors? When there's so much paper money today, why is it so urgent that public lands be paid for in metal?
Oh, you've been caught in the get-rich-quick fever, too, huh? Son, paper money is only a promise to pay, a promise issued by any number of individual banks around the country. There isn't enough hard cash to make good all of this paper.
But the lands have increased in value.
Really? And how?
Well, because of the great demand for them.
That, my boy, is one of the great illusions of our day. The western lands have increased in price, not in value. The government sold them at $1.25 an acre. Today, they're 800% higher in price than they were 2 years ago. But no more valuable.
Well, that may be true, but money's plentiful. Congress ordered the Treasury surplus distributed to the states. $9 million was distributed before you took office, and another $9 million this month.
Oh, don't remind me. More easy money, more squandering of funds, over expansion of credits, over inflation of values. It can't go on indefinitely. The bubble will break.
Oh, Father, I'm afraid you're becoming a pessimist.
That's twice today I've been called that. Now read your Bible, my boy. Many, many take hell of passion.
What's that?
The handwriting on the wall. I wish more people could read it.
I'm glad you could find a little time for this drive with me, Father.
Oh, I have to get some fresh air once in a while, son. I have to clear my weary brain. Even I didn't expect the financial storm to break so soon.
Yes, those reports from New York are pretty bad, aren't they? Market prices are falling rapidly. Fortunes are being wiped out.
I know. The real fortunes of the innocent along with the paper fortunes of the speculators.
There's great resentment in Wall Street. No, brokers blame the specie circular ordering payment of hard money for lands. They say it's caused by Eastern banks taking their gold and silver to land offices across the country.
That may have hastened the panic. But it wasn't the cause, son.
Did you see the report of Winthrop's talk?
No. What did he say?
Well, he told a mass meeting that the people have been cheated and plundered by the government, and that the time might come when the crew must seize the ship.
The insolence of the man. I warned him that it was a false prosperity. Did he expect it to continue indefinitely?
Read the latest from New York. Wall Street in great turmoil. Market prices collapse.
We have reminders enough. And it won't end in Wall Street, son. This storm will be felt in every city and village and every town and hamlet. Let me offer the food shop, will you?
Oh, of course. Shall I go with you or wait?
Oh.
Neither. You go on with your drive. I'll walk back.
All right. Oh, don't forget, the senator from Massachusetts has an appointment for 4.
I wish I could forget it. Mr. Webster is very eloquent and can see only one side of his picture.
Well, you're the president, sir. I'll see you later. Get up.
Oh, Mr. President, I haven't seen you lately. I thought you'd forgotten me.
Oh, I couldn't do that, Mrs. Appleby. I've been rather busy.
Yes, of course. These are troubled times.
Oh, they are indeed. Do you know, I could be persuaded to enjoy a cup of your excellent tea?
Oh, I'm delighted. Come right into the kitchen and I'll get the kettle on.
Thank you, Mrs. Appleby. Tell me, what do you do when you have to do something distasteful that you know is right?
You mean like giving the children some of that awful medicine?
Yes, very much like that.
Why, I just do it.
In spite of their protests?
You can't listen to protests when something has to be done.
You're quite right. Tell me, how is business lately?
Rather quiet, sir, but more satisfactory.
In what way?
Well, since the value of paper money started falling, I've sold only for hard cash. And that makes it easier for me to buy my merchandise.
A very sound plan, madam. You pay cash for all your purchases?
Yes, sir. I like to run business on a cash basis. Of course, I could have operated like the Blunts, but
the Blunts? The Blunts?
Yes. They have that big store a mile away.
Oh, yes.
They've been making all their purchases on credit and investing in stocks. They were doing very well for a while, too.
So? How are they doing now?
They lost their store this morning. Their money was tied up in stocks.
I see. And the stocks have fallen to a point where they can't pay their debts.
Now you stop worrying about the country, Mr. President, and enjoy your tea.
That's excellent advice, Mrs. Appleby. But I'm paid to worry about the country. Ah, it's a wonderful cup of tea.
Thank you. You know, with some kinds of sickness, you just have to wait for the patient to recover. Fretting and fussing won't take the place of time and nature.
Mrs. Appleby, you're a very remarkable woman.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
We Americans know that millions of people in Europe are living on a substandard diet. This knowledge is shown by the tremendous amount of relief and gift packages sent to Europe last year by private individuals. $215 million worth, not including care packages. These care packages, by the way, are the most efficient way of sending help to individuals or groups overseas. You see, care works on a non-profit basis, enabling you to send more for less. Care furnishes a variety of packages. One that contains enough food to feed a baby the first 3 months of life. Another with all wool herringbone, sufficient to make a full suit of clothes. And for $5.50, it's Thrift Package. Care delivers desperately needed food staples. So, to send a package containing the most for the least, order now through CARE. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Have you been able to guess the identity of the president concerned in today's story? I'll tell you later if your guess is correct. Meanwhile, let's return to the troubled president who has gone back to the White House for a meeting he doesn't relish with a senator from Massachusetts.
Mr. President, a grave financial crisis exists in our land.
Yes, Senator, I'm well aware of it.
What do you intend to do about it?
For the moment, I'm studying it.
This is outrageous talk, sir. Our Rome is burning. Do you plan to do nothing but fiddle?
Senator Webster, what is taking place in the nation today did not happen overnight and cannot be remedied overnight.
Do you realize, sir, that brokerage houses are beginning to collapse? Do you know that textile mills supported by these brokerage companies have shut their doors? Do you find in your heart no compassion for the workers who have been turned out into the street?
Senator, I am fully acquainted with the facts. I don't like them any better than you do. If you have a solution to this problem, which is giving me sleepless nights, I should like to hear it.
The solution is simple, sir. It is hard money that is driving our people into these grievous hard times. I say abolish the specie circular. Issue more paper money. Liberalize credits. Then and only then will you alleviate the distress and help the helpless, the widow, the orphan, the suffering people throughout the length and breadth of this great land.
You use resounding words, Mr. Webster. But you offer no practical solution. When a fire is burning, more fuel will not put it out. Too much credit, too much paper money is a prime cause of this fire.
You speak in riddles, sir. Until you came into office, times were prosperous. Abolish hard money, loosen credit, issue more paper money, and once again the sun will shine on a happy and prosperous nation.
Mr. Webster, more paper promises will not help us. No printing press can be a substitute for the sweat of the public brow. I will not allow the easy path of temporary delusion and have ultimate ruin. I will not mortgage the country.
And I, sir, will report to the people your failure to act. Let the people judge who is their enemy. Good day, Mr. President.
Father, I saw Willard and Michael Bryan today.
Oh, well, how are they faring in these troubled times?
They cut me dead. They wouldn't even speak to me.
I'm sorry to hear that. Apparently the panic has hit them hard.
Yes, I've heard they're ruined. Their fortune virtually all gone.
It's a shock, but I'm not surprised. You marvel at how quickly they made their money. They made it by speculating, by gambling with pieces of paper. They lost it by the same method.
Well, the Bryans aren't the only ones who seem to feel you're the cause of their misfortune. You'd be surprised at the number of people who won't see me or even speak to me anymore.
I am surprised. Even if I am the heartless monster responsible for this panic, as the Whigs and their newspapers maintain, why should anyone blame my son?
Oh, I can bear up under the strain. Of course, it cuts down on the list of young ladies I can squire about town.
That, my boy, is the first good thing that's come out of this panic.
Well, don't you want me to be popular?
Oh, yes, but if you're too popular with the young ladies, you won't be popular with the men. Incidentally, son, Mr. Winthrop should be here by now. Will you see who's been waiting?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, how do you do there, young man? I have an appointment with the president.
Yes, Mr. Winthrop. He's waiting to see you.
Come in, Mr. Winthrop, won't you? Come in. Yes. Won't you sit down?
Thank you. Mr. President, as you may know, I have been appointed spokesman to head a committee of some 50 merchants and bankers of New York City.
Yes, I understand that.
Do you also understand that the real estate holdings of this group have depreciated some $40 million?
I wasn't aware of the figure, no.
That is only one loss we have suffered, sir. Our stocks have depreciated 20 millions. Merchandise in our warehouses is now worth 30% less.
That is a tragic loss.
It is by no means the extent of losses in New York. Hundreds of business houses have gone bankrupt. Do you know, sir, that land on Upper Broadway, which sold less than a year ago for $480 a lot, now changes hands for $50?
I know, Mr. Winthrop, I know. It isn't a pleasant thing, and the same thing is taking place in other communities.
New York, sir, is in despair. There is no hope unless you withdraw the specie circular. We also demand that you call an extra session of Congress for the passage of Senator Clay's bill to distribute the land revenue among the states. We also ask for the rechartering of the National Bank.
Mr. Winthrop, you ask and you demand impossibilities.
You refuse these requests from New York's business leaders?
I do. The commercial distemper from which this country suffers, sir, will not be cured by renewing all of the things which have already brought it to the brink of despair.
But we are businessmen, sir. We believe we see this matter clearly.
And I'm the head of a government, and I believe I see it more clearly than you. If I were to withdraw the specie circular, I would unleash another great flood of paper money and speculation that would create great disturbance later on. Senator Clay's bill to give the land revenue to the states would mean another free gift, more squandering and plundering of the Treasury. And the National Bank will not be rechartered to give one man the power of life and death over the entire country. Now you go back and tell your people that.
Father, here's your answer from Winthrop and the New York group.
Let me see then. All New York banks cease issuing gold and silver. Hereafter, payments will be in paper only. This is incredible.
You know what it means. That paper money isn't worth a fraction of its face value.
Of course it isn't. Its value goes down by the hour. This is evil work, my boy. It will be followed by bank suspension throughout the country. Not only the rich, the very rich, and the farmer will be spared the pinch of want.
Now you don't want to see the rest of these papers.
Yes, I do. What's this? The president does not dare show himself for fear of being assassinated. Well, this is very interesting information.
I didn't want you to read that. Father, can't we do something about a paper that utters such slander and sedition?
Freedom of the press, my boy. It's unwise to interfere with it. I don't think this editor believes what he writes himself.
Well, what about this one? It claims you're responsible for all of our present difficulties.
Considering how quickly the difficulties came after I got into office, I must have been a very busy man.
Well, can't anything be done about this financial crisis?
Time is the best healer. Time and retrenchment. However, if the politicians and bankers are forcing the issue, we can't wait for more time. I want a note sent to the Secretary of the Treasury. No more government money is to be deposited in banks that have refused to pay in hard money. Also, we shall call for a special session of Congress. If they want a plan, I have one. They won't like it, but it's the only way.
The President of the United States.
Well, Mr. Winthrop, at least we forced this special session of Congress.
Right, Senator. But what remedy will the president offer? Will he re-charter the National Bank?
How can he help it?
Gentlemen, we are confronted with a financial panic. Its immediate cause is overaction in all departments of business stimulated by excessive issues of bank paper and other facilities for the acquisition and enlargement of credit. A domestic inflation has engendered a spirit of reckless speculation. Much of our labor has been diverted to needless improvements projected by speculators. This labor should have been applied to agriculture. We should not have found it necessary to spend large sums in the importation of grain from Europe. Should we countenance a repeal of the specie circular so that more of the people's land may be bought with paper money when the Treasury now holds $30 million of it? Should we give away more public funds when all but $1 million of the Treasury surplus is tied up in closed banks? It is not the object of government to make men rich. It is not its function to support the country. A good government enacts and enforces the laws while its citizens reap the reward of virtue, industry, and prudence. I object to the reestablishment of a national bank because it would bring again into existence a concentrated money power that would impair the supremacy of the popular will and threaten our republican institutions. I am suggesting instead a complete separation of bank and state. A plan for an independent treasury. The government will build its own vaults, keep its own bullion, and issue its own notes under careful control by the Treasury Department. I urge the adoption of this plan as a matter of sound economics, and I have faith that the proceeds of our great staples will soon enable us to liquidate our debts and revive our commerce.
Mr. President, I warn you now that I intend to fight your bill to divorce bank and state with every power at my command.
I'm sorry to hear that, Mr. Webster. I believe it is a good bill that must be adopted sooner or later.
That is your private opinion, sir. The tendency of this bill is to commit this country to an exclusive metallic currency.
Yes, I dare say that is one of its good features.
Only in your biased eyes. Your message to Congress some months ago appalled me by your refusal to prescribe for the sickness and distress of society.
I'm very sorry that was your reaction to my message and my bill, Senator.
It is more than my reaction, sir. It is the beginning of my great crusade against you and everything you stand for. I will make speeches throughout the country.
Yes, you're very good at speeches, I know.
I am well known as a man of the people, with the people's interests at heart. And I tell you, sir, that I will lend my name and my prestige and every persuasion I possess to seeing that you are not re-elected to this great office.
I understand, Mr. Webster, my re-election may be of personal interest to me. But in the main, it is unimportant whether a man is re-elected to office. Whether sound economy is achieved is far more vital to the country's welfare.
I want none of your kind of sound economy.
Nevertheless, the panic is subsiding. The country is back in harness, producing wealth, real wealth. False values have been recognized as such. We no longer pursue the false gods of easy money. Time, the great healer, will give us prosperity again. A genuine prosperity founded upon real production. Well, you've probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
The word dynamic perfectly describes Walter Winchell, one of the country's most powerful reporters of the news. Walter Winchell's dynamic news delivery has made him a favorite with millions of people. For Winchell not only tells the facts about the news, he gets behind the news to bring you startling exposés. Winchell is famous, too, for his daring exclusives. And when a big news story breaks here in America, or perhaps in a far-off news center, you can count on Winchell to have a different story about it, a story you won't read in your newspapers. So for important inside news on the headline events of the week, hear Walter Winchell when he broadcasts tonight over most of these same ABC stations. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Mr. President, how nice to see you again.
I'm glad to see you, Mrs. Appleby. And happy to know you're still in business.
Yes, I managed to weather the storm. Had to batten down the hatches for a few months, but the storm is over now and I survived.
Madam, you're a shining example of the practical and indomitable American businessman.
Me? Oh, Mr. President, you must be joking.
Oh, indeed I'm not. I mean it sincerely.
Well, we have all been through a great trial. I'm very happy that Congress has finally passed your sub-treasury bill. I know it is a good thing, and that our children and our grandchildren will be grateful for it to President Martin Van Buren.
Be with us again next week, won't you, for another story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Until then, goodbye.
This program is produced and directed by Dick Woolen. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President Martin Van Buren.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.